One by one, we were losing board members, unquote. He says that he himself had to leave after protesters took their campaign to one of his firm's largest clients. Quote, they were threatening my livelihood. At a certain point, you just say, hey, look, I've got other people I have to be responsible to, unquote. Frank Millsbaugh, whose home was picketed several times by these eager to get him off the board, seems to have used his sense of humor to help him get through the harassment experience. Quote, materials were handed out to my neighbors, denouncing me as a villain. Many of the materials were funny, in fact. One of the flyers actually had horns drawn on me and little fangs coming out of my mouth. That's truly, literally demonizing your opponent. But not everyone was as amusing. Millsbaugh was also subject to constant harassing phone calls and emails. As he goes on, quote, people in the national office got threats against their safety, and there were famous gunshots through the window of the Pacifica office there in Berkeley. I don't think anyone was actually trying to kill anyone else. I think they were, there were no one in the office, but Pat Scott, former executive director of the foundation, though, had to move out of her home and live in a hotel room under fictitious name for a while because the police told her they couldn't guarantee her safety. And there were calls in Berkeley to the national office staff that use extremely racist and extremely sexist language while threatening the clerical staff. So there was certainly an effort to win their position through intimidation of people who did not share their views, unquote. Someone who's been involved with Pacifica for over 20 years and who took a middle-of-the-road position vis-a-vis the coup was former KPFK Los Angeles stalwart Mark Cooper. Cooper, who writes for The Nation magazine, reports that, quote, I did not defend the National Board, but I didn't defend Dennis Bernstein and the crazies going on the air and taking it into the air. In fact, many people thought that I was taking kind of a dissonant position because I was criticizing the National Board when I was taking neither a dissonant nor a non-dissonant position. Basically, Cooper tried to offer constructive criticism to the parties on each side. Nevertheless, Cooper says, quote, for that mild, middle-of-the-road position, I then became the target of an unending, relentless campaign of personal slander, libel, and harassment. I was subjected to hundreds of emails from Berkeley and then put on all sorts of lists to say that I was a stoolie for the National Board. He continues, I was accused of being a CIA agent. I'm a former translator for the president of Chile, Salvador Allende, and I lived through the 1973 military coup and wrote a book about it. And for that, I was rewarded with hundreds of emails from Berkeley accusing me of having turned Allende into the CIA and having gotten him killed, even though I have friends and relatives who were killed in the coup, and even though I was nearly killed myself in the coup. Instead, they stood it on its head and tried to depict me as an agent of the CIA, which is personally nauseating and revolting, unquote. He says, when my book came out on Chile last year, my book readings were disrupted and interrupted by these brown shirt sort of Free Pacifica demonstrators who showed up. I was in Los Angeles and Santa Cruz, and they were trying to wreck a book reading, just like Nazis. I've been picketed. There have been demonstrations held at KPFK demanding that I be fired. There have been concerted letter-writing campaigns directed against Nation Magazine, where I'm also employed, to try to get me fired from there. And of course, in the end, I was fired from Pacifica, unquote. Cooper was not reticent about letting the most recent management know where he felt they were going wrong, which undoubtedly led to suspension. He explains, I told them that this was my impression that this new management, both at the local and national levels, had a vision that discounted our current audience as illiterate or illegitimate. They had this notion that we had strayed from the mission of Pacifica, therefore the stations needed to be rectified. And we needed to attract back this imaginary, real audience that they believed existed out there. I was being asked to raise money from an audience they considered to be illegitimate for a project that would disenfranchise this audience. I thought this was dishonest. Second, I objected to the empowerment of KPFK of the local advisory board. This unelected group of 6 to 8 people, most of them litigants, had done nothing for the station. They don't represent the station or its listeners. They've cost us tens of thousands of dollars in lawsuits and boycotts and pretending to be the leadership of our listeners. And now they're being empowered. They run programming decisions. They're suggesting who gets on the air. They're suggesting who becomes a manager. They're kind of running the station behind the scenes. And I thought that this was a great disrespect for our audience, unquote. Former KPFK Los Angeles station manager Mark Schwab experienced personal harassment, which he described as, quote, the usual death threats and protests and shouting me down, unquote. He says, quote, I never once went to a meeting where I was allowed to speak, where I just wasn't shouted down. I go to the public events, but I was shouted down all the time. They didn't want to hear me. Some of the violence was really offensive. They systematically vandalized my car, smashing the windshield, smashing the side view mirror, throwing a rock at the side window. There are key gouges deep enough down both sides of the metal. Essentially, my entire car had to be repainted and needs bodywork. Just hateful, childish stuff from people who say they're saving Pacifica's mission, which started as a pacifist station who wanted to bridge the understanding between people and explore the cause of political and philosophical antagonisms. We have to vandalize the car of the person because we disagree with him? That's ridiculous, unquote. Schwab also speaks of being defamed on a weekly, on a variety of grossly inaccurate websites, quote, dedicated to the evil Pacifica Radio and people like myself, unquote. There are website accounts, he said, quote, of me being brutal and firing people and taking shows off the air that never happened, unquote. Keep in mind that one of the problems that you will find if you're in my shoes doing an investigation of what has happened with the Pacifica conflict over the last year and 8 months is that it is not a matter of disagreeing. We all should have a right to disagree with one another. But it's whether you can allow yourself to disagree with someone without forcing them by intimidation or anything that borders on the illegal or is illegal into agreeing with you so that you do not any longer have a democratic forum. You have one forum, your way or no way. And I have documented enormous amounts of activities that no human being should ever be subjected to that were done to these board members. And remember, these are volunteers, unpaid volunteers. Let's look at how they did it. The web is a weapon. So they got control. The dissidents took control. How did they do it? And that's a story the media has missed. It is unfortunate that the internet, which was supposed to facilitate enlightenment and communications, is sometimes used as a weapon to intimidate or defeat particular factions in disputes. This was certainly true in the Pacifica conflict. Consider that the website Progressive Portal, an internet service for activists, boasts a quote, through a campaign that included more than a million email letters sent by Progressive Portal users, a nationwide grassroots movement was able to regain control of the Pacifica network, unquote. The Progressive Portal article, quote, Earthlink kills Progressive Portal without a word, states, on November 15, 2001, Progressive Portal began its email campaign to several officials at Pacifica National Board member Wendell John's employer, the Federal National Mortgage Association, Fannie Mae, with Earthlink, Progressive Portal's web hosting service, shut until they shut them down. Earlier that year, on July 10, 2001, quote, more than 11,000 protesters sent email letters to affiliate offices of the National Association of Home Builders, according to Progressive Portal, quoted in a Pacifica campaign update. The actions of the day were, quote, coordinated by the Pacifica campaign to stop the takeover, unquote. On July 10th, an email campaign of 1,500 emails, all sent at once, had been forwarded to the computer system of a Winnipeg, New Jersey affiliate of the NAHB. Why? The affiliate was the employer of Ken Ford, whom the dissidents wanted off the Pacifica National Board. The release says, quote, tell them Ken Ford must resign from the Pacifica National Board, unquote. It even lists Ken Ford's phone number. The manager of the Whippany affiliate spoke with dissent protesters, quote, complaining bitterly about how the 1,500 emails had crashed his system, unquote. There was no connection between the National Association of Home Builders and Pacifica. Another daily protest campaign against Ford through his employer occurred between October 31st, 2001 and November 17, 2001. Valerie Chambers, an accountant with a doctorate, who was a professor at Texas A&M in Houston in 2001, was also on the Pacifica National Board. She's an African-American woman. Unfortunately for her, some people did not want her to remain on it. And in early 2001, a massive email campaign, sometimes hundreds of messages a day, started hitting her work address. Some of the emails contained viruses. This harassment was in addition to protest phone calls made not only to Chambers, but also to her bosses at various academic levels, up to the president of the university. Her students were contacted as well, and a negative ad was placed in the student newspaper. The following email threat was sent to Valerie Venisser on June 21, 2001. Quote, "Hi, Miss Chambers. If you're in today, I'd be eager to talk with you personally about what has happened and what will certainly happen to you vis-a-vis protest. You may be pissed at me now, but you're going to get real pissed a lot more at a lot more people. Of course, you must be well aware that former Pacifica National Board member Michael Palmer and David Acosta went through with pickets of their homes and businesses, and you will shortly become the focus of that sort of attention. The only way you can head that off is to resign, which you will in the end doing shortly. And there is no way we're going to let up until you have resigned the board. It's really that simple. So call me. I'm very pleasant to talk with, actually, and think it would be useful for you to get a sense of what you're in for if you continue on the board past this week." Unquote. If this letter writer was pleasant to talk to, he was not particularly pleasant to communicate with in an electronic venue. On December 2nd, 2001, he went on, quote, "Below is a text of my letter sent today to your faculty colleagues. It will soon be sent to all accountants in Texas. During the next several weeks, I will launch a challenge to your Texas license through the Texas State Board of Public Accountancy and filing a complaint through the American Institute of CPAs Joint Ethics Enforcement Program. I will work to see that the Pacifica Foundation is rid of your destructive influence and that your license to practice accountancy in Texas is revoked." Unquote. Examples of this sort of harassing email abound. I have thousands. Here's an excerpt of an email from Juan Gonzalez, coordinator of the Pacifica campaign, sent on September 17, 2001 to Chambers and five other Pacifica National Board members, Ken Ford, John Murdoch, Bert Lee, Robert Fell, and Wendell Johns. Quote, "Remember, the Pacifica campaign is out there in the streets. It is those people demonstrating weekly outside the Pacifica stations, picketing your place of employment, leafleting your neighborhood, informing your business contacts and fellow churchgoers about your role in this affair. No matter what happens, the listener movement will not rest, and you will not have peace of mind until Pacifica is reclaimed." Unquote. But what about the truth? Let's examine that. The truth about the board. For about 3 weeks after Valerie Venisser's departure, dissident rallies and internet sites set up a mass cry about there having been a coup and about capitalists on the national board planning to sell WBAI. But was there really a need to create this crisis atmosphere? As discussed, there was no plan to sell the station. But what about the oft-repeated accusations that Pacifica board members were representatives of, quote, the corporate elite, unquote, who were working for, quote, multinational interests, unquote? Who exactly were these people on the board? And particularly after the board's minority dissents sued the majority members, four separate lawsuits were filed, I wanted to learn something about the accused. And while the board, as an entity, defended itself, at no time did any of the individuals sued go on the offensive. They didn't seem to be fighters. This was odd because, according to the dissidents, they were supposed to be ultra-capitalist. All of the so-called capitalists on the board had professional backgrounds, and all, with the exception of John Murdoch, were liberals. They willingly made available their information on their banking, and credit references, and income references. And what I found was there were really middle-class people. Most were African-American. They had worked for years as volunteers on local advisory boards, in Houston, Washington, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, all proving themselves in a local arena, and then their local labs, seeing their commitment to the important causes of their station, voted them up to the national board, where they began working as volunteers. To a person, they had supported the civil rights movement, the feminist movement, the environmental rights movement, the human rights movement, hence the original attack by Juan Gonzalez that they all lack progressive principles and credentials. Not true. Hence, the original attack was one that allowed a lot of people to get the wrong impression of who the enemy was. The trouble is, these people were given no forum to speak back. They had no radio shows, held no press conferences, put out no ads, had no email campaigns. No one had asked them to prove their progressive credentials prior to attacking them. On a note, an individual came into my office in New York from Houston. He was here at the invitation of one of the leading dissidents' financial backers. And when he went on about how they were going to attack these people, wanting to engage my support, my listener support, I asked him a question. Are the people you're talking about, have you called and spoken or asked any question of any of your concerns with the people you're attacking? Have you called? And I went down each name. Did you call Michael Palmer? Did you call Acosta? Did you call Millspaugh? Did you call Ken Ford? The answer was no. Why should I? Why should you? What if you're wrong, I asked. We're sure we're not wrong. We couldn't be wrong. They're going to sell the stations. They're taking over our foundation. They're multinationalist. I said, how do you know they're multinationalist? Do you know how much money they make? What if I told you that three of the people that are being called multinationalists make under $50,000 a year and have worked their entire life in progressive liberal causes for social justice? Would they still represent the threat you think they do? Is this not really a difference in ideologies? The person became angered. You don't get it, Gary. We're going to take back the stations. And I said, take it back from whom? For what? What are you going to replace with? I said, shouldn't there be a dialogue? Come together and talk with people. Take your concerns and see how they respond to the concerns you have. In America, shouldn't we give people a trial before we lynch them? And he said, I'm an avowed anarchist. I know what I'm doing, and I intend to bring them down. I said, but what if you destroy the foundations and the listener base and the station in the process? He said, so be it. With that, he got up and left. That was not the first type of conversation that I had of that form, where they did not want to ask the people their opinions before they attacked them, as if they had a knowledge of them. They had been so successfully demonized. And I brought this up to one of their attentions. I said, you know, before we as a country take on another country, another person, we first have to demonize them. And there's a very ritualistic process of chronic news reports coming out that all show one failing of the person we're going to attack after another, till everybody says, my God, this person's terrible. Let's just go out and knock them off. And that's when the more progressive community comes on board and says, hold on a second. How do we know that these are truths? How do we know there's not some other agenda? The very people who supposedly supported a progressive, open, and a democratic form were not using it in this case. Just to the contrary. What these people had in common is that they were educated, they did have a knowledge of how businesses should work, and they wanted to bring standards to the foundation and hence to the stations. They wanted to run the foundation professionally and to the staff at the radio stations with competent professionals as well. So they vetoed the atmosphere of anarchy that sometimes characterized station offices. But if they were to be labeled corporate, it was in the sense that they wanted to bring a good business standard of accountability to running Pacifica. And as Utrecht Lead has pointed out, quote, in the end, the board members are running a corporation. Pacific is a corporation. And when it comes to doing business day to day, even as a nonprofit corporation, you have to behave in a particular way, unquote. My investigation has found that these people were being maligned. Their goals were to be more progressive, to bring more topics to the airwaves, to cultivate a wider audience, and to manage the stations in a professional as manner as possible. They were not trying to subvert Pacifica's mission. They were not minions of Rupert Murdoch. They were not part of a corporate effort to sell the station. They were being slandered. And they were not using the court system to fight back because they didn't have the wherewithal or perhaps the instinct to do so. As one of the harassed board members asked, quote, when are the programs on arts, literature, culture, comparative religion, humanistic studies, and environmental health sciences, when are they going to exist? Unquote. Board member Bert Lee finds it laughable that he was considered a corporate shill. Quote, this is just nonsense. I grew up a communist in an environment. What I got philosophically at home, not only from my father, but from my grandfather. Now here I am having someone accuse me of being a corporate type, unquote. Board member Ken Ford points out that the vast majority of people on the national board came from local advisor boards. Quote, if the lab had confidence to put you in that position, how could we have just come willy-nilly from the corporate elite, unquote. Ford then goes on to refer to organizations he's affiliated with. As far as being multinational, Fannie Mae is not a multinational company. They try to get everybody into a house. The association I work for is a trade association, not a multinational. The Youth Commission on Civil Rights is not a multinational corporation. There are no people on there from any multinational corporations except for one of the dissidents, Rob Robinson, who works for a defense industry company. They never talk about the fact that he worked for one of the major defense contractors. Ken Ford has alluded to the steep price that ATTAC board members paid in terms of having their names besmirched. Quote, they attacked everyone individually. A lot of people have reputations to protect, while those dissidents have nothing to lose. People who have spent a lifetime putting together a reputation and legacy see it destroyed because of the irresponsible actions of some people who don't care, who have nothing to lose, who, in my opinion, feel they've been losers in life and life has beaten them down. Well, here's a chance to get back and destroy, even get even. And they don't care who they step on, unquote. Frank Millsbaugh, with years of experience, decades of experience with Pacifica and BAI, offered this frank perspective on board friction. Quote, there are a lot of people around who don't like to see the blacks make money. They feel that once black people emerge in the middle class, they've lost their political credibility and virginity. There were richer people on the board in the 1960s. There were a lot of black middle professional class on the board when I was there. On critical votes, all of the people of color and a couple of the white were voting on one side. Everyone voting on the other side were white activist types. I was probably the last to notice because I'm an old white guy, unquote. The victory of the dissidents must be recorded as one of the most violent takeovers of a foundation in American history. To galvanize support for a movement to take back Pacifica, they first had to have a few hooks to make it easy to demonize the opposition. The four basic pillars to the dissidents' arguments were that board members were doing, quote, attempting to sell the station, two, personally profiting from the sale of the license, three, changing the bylaws to eliminate local control, and four, corporatizing Pacifica. All four of these accusations are false. But the real dishonesty is in the actions or lack of actions of the media watchdogs of the left and even the right and corporate counterparts. Media watchdog Fairness and Accuracy in Media showed itself as an organization in this instance to be especially unfair. Their members made no effort to interview or contact the progressive members of the board who were being attacked. Instead, they took a leading role in spreading half-truths and false accusations based upon the thinnest kernel of truth, supporting Amy Goodman with no vision for the future of the entire Pacifica network and its workers or listeners who were abused by Fair's activities. The Nation magazine wasn't any better, and maybe even worse because more was expected of a journal that prides itself as one of the most influential of the liberal left. The Nation didn't want to be challenged and did nothing to report the story of the Pacifica crisis from the point of view of the progressives. Even more surprising was the silence of establishment media that one might have thought would have relished reporting the internal strife of the liberal left. But even they were, for the most part, silent. And then we come to Lewis Hill. Some of the dissident voices have invoked the name of Lou Hill, the venerated pacifist who founded Pacific over half a century ago. So what exactly did Lou Hill believe in? How did we today benefit from his legacy? Would he have approved the current protest? Here are the answers. Lewis Kimball Hill was born in 1919 in Kansas City, Missouri, to Laura Phillips Hill and Johnson Hill, a lawyer. Arthur Matthew Lazar relates how Hill grew up in an, quote, atmosphere of sudden wealth, unquote, because his uncle, Frank Phillips, had married into a wealthy banking family and bought oil fields from the breakup of the Oklahoma Indian Territory. Soon, Frank Phillips, a former singing barber, will be a Southwest oil millionaire. The Phillips Petroleum Company, known for its chain of Phillips 66 gas stations along legendary Route 66, would, by the late 1920s, become the symbol of jazz age prosperity. Lewis's father also entered the oil business, and he entertained the hope that Lewis would follow suit. But the boy had other interests. He was fascinated with radio, and at the age of six, he constructed a small crystal radio set with ease. This and subsequent striking evidence of Hill's technical skills, he had an aptitude for repairing devices that no one else could fix, displeased Johnson Hill, who wanted another oil man in the family. In the latter part of World War II, Johnson Hill was elected speaker in Oklahoma State Assembly on the promise he would investigate kickback charges at the state university. His anti-corruption reformist platform began his political career and may have set a moral example for his son, Lewis. Lewis Hill detested his stint at Missouri Military Academy, and this helped foster him as a, quote, lifetime contempt for militarism, unquote. Lewis Hill eventually, quote, fled to Stanford University, where he studied philosophy and flew planes for sport. There, Hill would embrace existentialism, which emphasized the uniqueness of personal experience and the responsibility of the individual for the choices he or she makes. Hill was also deeply influenced by the 19th century philosopher Kierkegaard, from whom he derived a kind of moral optimism, and by the great Indian pacifist Mahatma Gandhi. At Stanford, Hill also came into contact with the pacifist Quaker philosopher, and he himself became a pacifist. In 1941, he faced the draft. Hill could easily have qualified for an 4F or a medical dispensation, but he chose conscientious objector, CO status, instead. And although 90% of COs named religion as their motivating force, Hill was one of the minority who claimed a non-religious creed, which seems to indicate that he had carefully thought out his philosophical stance. It was after the war in 1946 that Hill and other ex-conscientious objectors created the Pacifica Foundation, aptly named to proclaim one of its founders' basic tenets. In 1949, listener-supported KPFA in Berkeley became the Pacifica's first station. In the Foundation's Article of Incorporation, the purpose of the Pacifica Enterprise was, quote, to promote the full distribution of public information to obtain access to sources of news not commonly brought together in the same medium and to employ such varied sources in the public presentation of accurate, objective, comprehensive news on all matters vitally affecting the community, unquote. One of the influences on Hill has been the BBC's cultural programming, and thus KPFA featured, in addition to news, a mix of somewhat highbrow offerings. In the musical area, there was a classical music, a lot of serious jazz, ethnic and folk music, and contemporary music. In fact, Hill believed that at least 36% of the programming should be music and jazz. Hill's basic idea of radio station was that it was an edifying force. Many people today do not know this, but Hill did not see the ideal radio stations as a means for public access, but as a reflector of community preferences or opinions. There were no local advisory boards in Hill's times. The lab was mandated by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting in 1979, and he was not interested in listener control of Pacific stations. He did admit some listener feedback, non-renewing subscribers could let him know why they were dissatisfied on a regular report to the listener's program. Hill, since he had an obligation to provide his audience with quality educational radio, and that is where he spent his time. that was not the same as people would use his name to do. There's a common misconception that Hill and other Paseka founders were communist. Not true. Hill was not a communist. But also, all of the principles in the foundation's beginning had an aversion to the Communist Party. Hill did not like anything that smacked of propaganda, nor did he subscribe to Marx's concept of class revolution, nor to Marx's stress on economic determinism, which eliminates free will. Rather, Hill had more of an affinity for the ideas of Jefferson, Thoreau, and the journalist Dwight MacDonald. It should be noted that in 1948, Hill, with others, added a shielding phrase to Pacifica's mission statement to the effect that no substantial part of the Pacifica Corporation is designed to carry on propaganda or otherwise attempt to influence legislation. This phrase was deleted in 1971, leaving Pacifica wide open. And that's part of it. Considering all these facts about Lewis Hill, can dissidents justifiably say they are acting in his name? Some ex-Pacifica staffers don't think so. This is what former KPFK station manager Mark Schwab had to say on the subject. Quote, Lou Hill was a professional broadcaster who thought that we should provide a serious alternative. He was interested in dialogue, which is why he broadcast opinions on the right and the left. He didn't believe in a narrow leftist monologue. Yes, he wanted left of center and peace voices and community voices on the radio, but he wanted it to be coherent, and he wanted alternatives. He didn't worship voluntarism. He didn't worship the idea of just a narrow politically driven left. He wanted broad, cultural, unique programming services that could not only happen in listener sponsorship, but because of community-based radio. He took Ford Foundation grant money. He pretty much was at odds with his board over issues of accountability and wanted to fire people who didn't want to do their job, and the board being kind of liberal bleeding hearts, unwilling to fire people. I believe that he would be appalled by this today. Well, one-time WBAI manager Frank Millsbaugh points out, quote, Lou was a pacifist, so he would not have appreciated protesters doing things like shooting through office windows, threatening people's lives, jeopardizing their livelihoods, libeling them. He was an intellectual, so they would not have appreciated him. If Lou Hill showed up on the scene today, he would not be able to get through the door of most Pacifica stations simply based upon his intellectual credentials, unquote. We are out of time for this particular segment of the broadcast. I want to thank you very much for taking your time to listen today. And for those people who do not know what my specials are, you can call our office number today and get our specials at 646-505-4660. 646-505-4660. This is part two. Part one I gave on WBI earlier. Part two is now. Part three will finish it tomorrow. On giving you the background on the conflict of Pacifica. Again, our specials, sorry I didn't mention, didn't want to interrupt the flow of the program. Call our office and get that at 646-505-4660. Have a good day.
The preceding program was independently produced. The views and opinions expressed were those of the program host and guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WWRL, its staff, or management.